The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You're listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this latest edition of the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot, and glad to have you on board. All right, so the start of the season, the competitive season, just around the corner, with the Moomba Masters coming up in about a week or so, and obviously a major tournament attracting some great competitions and great competitors who have had plenty of experience skiing on the Yarra River. But one of the skiers that will be joining the roster, at least so far as the men's slalom is concerned, will be completely new to the Yarra setup, and will be skiing there for the first time. The person to whom I'm referring to is the current NCWSA male skier of the year, as well as being the men's national slalom champion. So he comes into the Moomba Masters with a great degree of pedigree. And let's welcome him here, Mr. Aaron Davies. How are you doing?
Hi, Tony. I'm doing really good. Thank you for having me.
All right then. So let's go straight to it. Moomba Masters coming up. You are seeded 10th coming into the Moomba Masters, unless something has changed within the last few hours or days prior. So what are your expectations going into this event? First time on the Yarra. People have probably told you some horror stories about what to expect on that moving river course, and not to get your expectations too high, at least so far as your first time is concerned. And what do you say to that?
Yeah, it's going to be one hell of an experience. There's a few tournaments you grow up watching, US Masters, World Championships, and the Moomba Masters. It looks like one of the most fun tournaments of the year. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going in with zero expectations. As you said, there's some horror stories that happen. It's a lot of money to go from the Northern Hemisphere down to Australia for this early in the year. So I'm kind of this. As you said at the start, this is my first year. So it's going to be fun. I have zero expectations going in, and I'm just hoping that I put on a good show.
And if you can actually make it to Monday, I think that will be playing with house money, wouldn't it?
Oh yeah, no. Skiing on Moomba Monday would be really cool. It'd be a real honor, especially on my first showing. But I'm hopeful. However, I'm not expecting anything. It could be a couple of thousand per buoy, looking at it that way. But I really hope it isn't. Trying to train in as much as you can and hope things go right.
All right then. So we'll track back to Moomba in a little while in this podcast, because I'm sure a few people out there have tuned in, as they typically do, as being subscribers to the TWBC podcast, seen this pop up, and probably are finding out, who the heck is Aaron Davies? I gave the spiel up front right at the beginning. But let's answer that question. Let's go back all the way to your youth and what have you, and answer that question. Who is Aaron Davies?
Oh, he's a no one, really. He's someone who thinks he's trying to make it at skiing. But no, I'm originally from a little town called Bolton in northern Manchester in England. I started skiing. I'm, third generation of skiers, like a lot of skiers are these days on the Pro Tour. Started skiing when I was 18 months old, on the front of my dad's jump skis. It's the same story that we've heard before. It's nothing new. However, it was really cool, my experience all the way through. I've skied at a lot of different sites in England. I've called a lot of sites home. In my youth, my very first few years skiing, I went to ski at Sale Water Park. And then we moved on to Hazelwood Ski World in my later years. of my youth. And then a gentleman called Stuart Lillis decided he wanted to dig a big hole in his backyard back in 2006 over in Wigan. That's now called Three Sisters Water Ski Club. We held a pro-am over there a few years ago. And that's where I really started to grow up skiing. That's 30 minutes away from my house. So that's where I would, that was where home was for a long, long time. I worked there a few times. But more recently, I've been skiing with Steve Glanfield at Oxford Wakeboard and Ski Club, which I'm very, you know, happy that for the first time we're hosting a pro tournament.
Nice, nice. And I mean, you rattled off a whole list of venues in the United Kingdom. I'm originally from the United Kingdom, so I can probably attest to the challenging aspect of being able to ski well at those sites that you mentioned, you know. So do you believe that that has kind of equipped you to be the relatively tough skier that you are today, so to speak?
Definitely think so. I, like a lot of kids in England, we skied in winter breaking the ice. Break the ice with, well, when I was at Hazelwoods with Carrie Ann, when I skied in the winter at Wigan, we used a little dinghy that we've got, breaking up the ice, doing donuts, breaking everything up, and then putting on a dry suit and going tricking, or if you're really nuts, like I will sometimes, go and slalom. So, but that definitely toughens you up. I wouldn't do it now, having been in the States for 6.5 years. But it definitely, it toughens you up a lot going into, you know, skiing later on.
Okay, so while in England, you did your first uni degree, didn't you? What did you graduate with in uni in England?
I actually never went to university in England.
No, you didn't?
I went straight to University of Louisiana at Lafayette. I did my undergrad, my whole undergrad, Lafayette. And then because I had some eligibility left due to injury, I decided to stay on for my Master's of Business Administration.
Okay, I'm glad that you segued a little bit to that injury, because you were out for basically 1.5, maybe 2 full seasons because of the injury you sustained during practice, which I think was for the national championships at that during that summer, around about that time, I believe. But kind of give us you'll hate this pun, a breakdown of kind of what happened and what you've had to do to get back to where you were.
Yeah, well, in the years leading up, I'd dabbled in a couple of pro tournaments. My first one being the Mapple Pro-Am at Thorpe in England. Obviously, it's the easiest, most convenient to get to. Didn't want to spend a lot of money on my first one. So I was, you know, that was good. That was in 2019. And then, you know, I dabbled a little again. But in 2022... I really started to get into it. I went to San Gervasio, went to Caiaphas Battle, did at the Cotswolds. We had the Duel, which was a really cool event as well. And I was feeling really good about the season. Everything was going as planned, putting down some good scores for myself. And then it all came crashing down, if you will. I was just practicing. It was another normal set. Things weren't going great, you could say. But it was, as far as I was concerned, it was a normal set. Just, of course, it was the last pass I was going to take for that set. And came around 4-ball and just fell forward and put my arm through the handle and snapped my radius and my ulna, unfortunately. But thanks to all the doctors who helped put me back together, I was skiing again in April of 23.
Does that ever flash back in your mind a little bit, especially as you start to work on some of the more challenging passes down the line, how much you're kind of approaching the edge?
At first, it did. I mean, obviously after an injury like that, while I was in cast and things like that, I was really wondering, am I going to be able to do this again? Is there going to be that mental block of, hey, don't do that again? That really hurt. what's, you know, and while you're in cast, while you're recovering, you're like, what's going to happen to me as soon as I put on the ski? You don't know what happens. And the first few sets, that's what that was like, what it was. I was very careful, you know, running easy passes, and that's just what it took to get over it. Right now, you know, all of last year, you know, and this year in the summers, I don't think about it anymore. The only thing that tells me I've got the injury is, you know, my arm sleeve that I keep on sometimes when I'm skiing. And that's it. I feel strong. My arm feels strong as it can be. And I'm very grateful to everyone who helped me do that. You know, from physios back home, physios here, Scott Jones in particular, he, you know, over in Lafayette, Louisiana, he helped me out a lot. My doctor over here, Brian Etier, I had to have a bone graft at the start of last year in February, and he put me back together and got me back on the water. All the doctors back at home in England, in Oxford, you know, Steve Glanfield, even my coach, who he was in the boat, and I'll never forget his face. Came back. I said, "Steve, I need to go to the hospital." He goes, "I know." Because he didn't even have to look at me. He could feel it from the driver's seat. But yeah, everyone who helped me put together, I've just got to say a massive thank you. But yeah, in terms of a mental block, I don't. And, you know, you can't, when you're an athlete, you can't have these mental blocks. You got to try and push past them as much as you can. Train well, train good, and know when the limit is. That's something I did learn during the accident was, hey, if something's going wrong, don't fight it in practice. Okay, in tournament, you might want to go a little more because it's more important, but for practice, there's no need to be doing anything crazy.
Okay. All right, then. That was a very succinct answer to answer that question. Now, what it's one or two questions that it's kind of posed a little bit is how to make it safer.
Yes.
So far as the handle is concerned.
Yeah.
And you happen to have in your possession, you're trying out, but although you won't be competing with it, the new T-type handle that's going to be undergoing a 24-month trial, according to the text of the newly released rule book. What's been your experience working with that type of handle, and would it be something that you would be open to use in tournaments given the trial period?
As you said, I have a few of them. Two of them, an early concept and a later concept. It wasn't the final one in the end. But Jason Peckham, he helped me. Well, I helped him. I tested a couple of them for him, gave him my feedback. And they're not that bad to ski with. A bit weird at first, but you get used to it. Now, are you going to see every single person changing their current handle to go and get one? I doubt it. However, I love that someone has thought outside the box. Don't connect the ropes at the end where there's a big hole, but, you know, connect them towards the middle. And it's good. It doesn't rotate as much as you would think. So it's a good handle. I've run some 38s with it, some 11 meter passes, and got most of the way down 39 with it. With a bit more practice with it, I think it'll become a lot more normal. However, is it gonna completely revolutionize the water ski handle? We will wait to see. But for the next 24 months, I think we'll see a couple of them around, but I don't think we'll see them all on the pro circuit because everyone's comfortable with what they have at the moment. But we'll see a few around, I'm sure.
All right, then. So moving on a little bit from that, to another technical aspect of you, so far as involving yourself in competitions and what have you. I believe you're a technical controller, or at least have a judge's rating that's equivalent to that.
Yeah, so I like to, you know, be as helpful as I can at tournaments. Anyone who knows me knows that. My current ratings, I am a regular driver in the States. That's a D3. I am a Pan Am judge, so J1. And I am a technical controller. I'm the lowest technical controller at the moment. I don't have a field light or anything like that.
No.
a bit expensive. I like to do a bit of everything. I'm my father's son, if you like. My dad, he does all that kind of stuff. He loves skiing. I just love to be around it. I love to help in any way. This sport's given me so much. I like to give back in any way that I can, mostly in the driver's seat.
Indeed, and it kind of extends a little bit to you dabbling a little bit with the Shore Path, that system that James Timothy has came up with a few seasons ago and has revolutionized the whole world of driving. So even a schmoll like me can actually get somewhat close to being a somewhat decent driver. So for those of you out there that don't know too much about Shore Path, I mean, what have you kind of done a little bit? How much work have you done with Shore Path, the actual system itself, rather than any work with James Timothy?
Last year we got one at Bennett's. Jay got one for tournament use, and the start of this season, I started up straight away. As soon as I started skiing and training for Moomba, I got it up and running. Not as like a make sure people can drive me, but and everyone else here, but more of a tool for myself to learn to drive better. How the system works and how I can improve my own driving, because I think that's really important. I'm very far from perfect, and I think it's a great tool for drivers to use in practice as well, not just in tournament. It was great. Steve Glanfield back at Oxford told me that there was some guy coming down with a new boat path monitoring system. I was like, oh, here we go again. And I tell you what, I've been proved wrong. James, you did a great job, if you're listening. But of course he did. Everyone knows what Shore Path is these days.
Yeah.
And I think it's an amazing tool that people should use if they have tournaments at their sites, or if you want to become a better driver, consider investing in it. It's a great tool to use if you know how to use it well.
Yeah, they consider all the way back in the day when Zero Off came about, they considered it the marriage saver. I don't know what moniker would be leveled against a Shore Path, but something I would say somewhat similar.
Yeah, no, it's good. My girlfriend Vio, she's learning to drive herself. She's a good driver herself. She is. However, she didn't really know where she was in the course other than looking in the mirror. Using Shore Path, it helped her know exactly where she was in the slalom course when she's pulling me. I'm a 200-pound, 95-kilo guy. You know, I pull the boat around. I do pull the boat around a lot. 6'4" and 200 pounds, it on the short line, you're definitely going to pull the boat around. So it was good for her to make sure that she knew she was in the right place. In that way, you could say it's a relationship saver.
Indeed, indeed. All right, then. So we'll move along a little bit from the realm of practicing that kind of stuff to what you do in tournaments. Now, last year, I think it was either last year or the year before, you won your most coveted of titles at Kaiapa, right?
Yeah, I got the 2U skier of the day at Kaiapas. That hangs up on my bedroom wall down here, here at Bennett's. It's one of my most prized prizes because it's a public vote and people voted for me that day, which I'm grateful for. You know, when you're going up against the likes of Will Asher, Nate Smith, Freddie Winter, you know, well, Nate wasn't on at that tournament actually, but still, there were some amazing names there. You know, even the girls, you know, Ali Nicholson, they were all there, and they chose someone who's just trying to start out their career from Bolton in England. That was really cool. But yeah, it was a great tournament. I came out not expecting, you know, a huge amount, and got three at 41, which I was amazingly happy with.
I was about to ask you what your score halfway down 48 off, 41 off.
Wow, so Jesus, 48 off, Tony. Let's go one step at a time.
I think we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. I mean, speak for ourselves. And anyway, so. Yeah, halfway down 41 off, certainly a very, very impressive score. The site at Kaiapa, you know, it's one of those unusual sites, you know, where it's brackish water. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little bit of a strange setup on the even numbered passes. Kind of had to come in a little bit kinked and what have you, but. I mean, it's a great site, and I tell you what, it pulls in the punters, doesn't it?
I tell you what, there was some amazing scores there this year. The first year I went in 22, it was a smaller group of us. It was the same weekend as another tournament, but that didn't change the spectacle. It was an amazing tournament that year, and then the next year, I think it improved again. It was just such a vibe, you know. It was like, the only thing I could compare it to is, from my experience, is collegiate nationals. There was so much going on around you, uh-huh. Things like that. But in terms of the skiing was absolutely insane the last year in 23. It was pretty cool. We saw three people get into 43 off. We got Will, Freddie, and Nate, and that's the first time that happened in history. Mm-hmm. So brackish water is obviously doing something good over there. I've got my personal best over there, it's a good site. It's a really, really good site.
It
skis really well. Don't know whether it is something to do with the salt content that's in the water. Whatever it is, something's going right over there.
Just has that nice little balance, doesn't it? But with having the ski riding too far into the water and having enough of it out to be really, really quick with the backside of the turn type deal, you know. So I mean on top of all of that, George Hatzis, like, he is the ultimate showman, isn't he?
He is a very he's a showman, and he's a gentleman. He is such a nice person. He helped put us up the first year when he was getting the KFS Battle Pro-Am for the first time. He put us up, made us feel welcome, told us where to go sightseeing. We went to waterfalls. It was a very Greek way of life, if you like. He said, you know, oh, you haven't got hire cars? Here you go, take our cars, type of thing. Just, you know, go on. And these weren't like cheap cars, they were nice cars. And, you know, it was amazing. We all had a great time. It was just, George is an amazing person and who does so much for Greek water skiing.
Certainly, certainly. And there are obviously other tournaments that you'll be looking forward to. The British Pro Tour stop is going to be coming around fairly soon afterwards, right?
Yeah, so the last stop of the European Pro Tour is going to be at my home site at Oxford Wakeboard and Ski Club. And that's one that I've been trying to push Steve to do for a little while. I always ski really well there. I think it's an amazing, amazing site. Steve's done really good down there. He's got a good group of members. It's a water ski club, you know. So big shout out to Steve and his family. Hope everyone's doing well. Agatha and the baby, and because he went through a bit of, you know, I don't know, I hope he doesn't mind me saying, but he went through a tough year last year, but he was still the same old Steve. He was a great, great coach, great friend. So that was, it was good to see him again.
Yes, indeed. And you also mentioned some other people, some of them from Caiapha, Will Asher and the like. But, you know, in terms of British, in terms of British slalom skiing, I mean, it's quite easy to find inspiration from a whole bunch of different skiers, you know, currently or even back in the day. So, who was your main inspiration on the slalom lake growing up? Right from the outset.
Well, you know, I grew up on skiing on the weekends at Hazelwood, and who was there in the summer was Will Asher. You saw him go by and you're just, you know, your mouth wide open, just like, oh my God, he makes it look so easy. So, you know, I admire Will still to this day. I think he's probably one of the best stages of his career so far. He's putting in some amazing scores. And he doesn't look like he's holding up at all at the moment. I also had the pleasure of meeting Andy Mapple a few times. He was the first person to sponsor me a ski shortly before his untimely death back in 2015, I believe. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I remember when I got the message that he'd passed. Anyway, not to go too much into that, but he helped me out a lot, and I saw him ski a few times, and you know, I admired him a lot as well.
Most certainly. Going forward a little bit, so far as your expectations this season, your ambitions going forward, what does the perfect season look like for you?
Making it through with no injuries. I have been known to be slightly accident prone. Not by choice, of course. No one does. But the first goal is get through the season in one piece. I'm going to as many pro tour stops as I can this year. It's going to be my first year doing as many as I am going to do this year. I'm going to do as every weekend of the European stops, I'm going to be there, and as many of the ones over in the States that I can be at as well. So it's going to be a first. It's going to be a lot of skiing. It's going to be a lot of traveling. My girlfriend, Viole, she's going to come with me. We're going to hire a camper, and we're going to do a camping trip all over Europe this summer. So that's how we get into each tournament.
That sounds nice. And you did briefly hint a couple of questions back about your first ski sponsorship. You're currently sponsored by D3. Tell us a little bit about that and your working relationship with Will and Elaine going forward.
You know, I've been up to Will's place. I've helped, I haven't helped too much, but I've, you know, skied on their skis since start of 2018. I bought my own D3 ski back in 2016, and that was a D3 Arc, and then in the start of 2018 I was signed on the team, my first contract as a contracted skier, which was amazing. And the first few years, it was kind of just, hey, here's a ski, help us out, you know, with media and stuff like that, of social media. I'm not a big social media person, as anyone knows anything about me. I'm, you know, it's all skiing related and not much else. But more recently, I've tried to, you know, help sell a few skis if I can, you know, test a few skis, you know, any way I can help them to repay what they've helped me with as well.
Yeah, I mean, especially given what happened to you two seasons ago. I mean, some more cutthroat ski sponsors would have pushed you over into the long grass, you know, given the expectation going forward. But Will and Elaine, to their credit, have kept you on board, and
yeah, they kept me on, which, of course, any skier knows that skis are expensive. They don't have an infinite lifespan. Well, not this day and age anyway. The old ones you see kicking around sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, no skis have an infinite lifespan. They start to break down, they snap. Sometimes you're putting a handle into them.
Mm-hmm.
And, accidents happen. So, that, anyone who knows anything about water skiing knows that the skis are expensive. So I'm very thankful for what they've helped me with.
Okay, and specifically the ski that you're on is the Neo 2, isn't it? The more aggressive ski that
Correct.
You and Freddie Winter typically ride compared to someone like Nate Smith that's on the other D3 ski. I'm sure that you've ridden both, but you've gone with the Neo 2, right?
Right. So actually, the ski I broke my arm on was an Ion 2. Okay, it's nothing to do with the ski. That was all my own fault. But, I was on the ski all of that season in 2022. Started off the season with Ion 2 again last year. And I felt like I needed a bit more kick out of the turn, if you like. A bit more snap. And I spoke to Freddie Winter about it, and he said, dude, you got to try Neo 2. It's a significant improvement on the predecessor. And it was exactly what I was looking for, just more speed out the turn and across the wakes. I like the ski a lot. I'm still on that one. At the moment, as I said before, I'm a 6'4", 200, 205-pound guy, depending on the day, so I'm right on the cusp between a 67 and 68. So I'm toying with, I'm trying a 68 later on in the season, when I get back from Moomba. So we'll see how that goes.
All right, then. So I mentioned Moomba right from the outset, and I'm going to mention Moomba all the way here because that's what I said. That's what we're tracking back to a little bit. So, obviously, you've mentioned that your expectations going into Moomba, you're going to ski it, and whatever happens, So, I mean, what do you think it's going to feel like for you as you start off the dock and you fulfill a lifelong dream skiing underneath the Swan Street Bridge and get ready for a pass?
Coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm glad I've skied at UL for a few years, because Airport Lake is not an easy lake to ski on. Anyone who's skied on it knows that.
I can tell you that.
And it's bumpy. So I'll be, thinking back to those sets where the conditions have been far from perfect. I really, hopefully I'll not be looking too much at the bridge and just focusing on the course. But yeah, I think it's going to be amazing no matter what happens. Just look, as I said at the start, it's my first outing. People on their first outing rarely do amazingly, but I'm hoping to not be of that form. Hoping that I can put a good show on for the crowd, and not just the crowd that's there, but everyone who tunes in worldwide.
And part of that crowd are going to be your parents, who are already in Australia at this time.
Yeah, my mum and dad, Pete and Eileen, they're already over there. They're with a few friends over there. The Finleys, Andy Finley, Julie Finley. Anyone who was a skier at Three Sisters knows them very well. And they're over there right now. And that's going to be my mum and dad's first time at Moomba as well. So dad said, if you're going, I'm going. So and the next day he'd booked two tickets for him and my mum.
And I'm sure they'll be bringing the Union flag with them and along the shore side.
Of course they will. They're, very patriotic, just like myself.
All right, then. So that was the podcast with Aaron Davies. And before we go, I normally give the opportunity for the person that's been interviewed a chance to say thanks, acknowledgements, that kind of stuff. So with that, Aaron, the floor is yours.
I'd just like to thank my whole family, mum, dad, you know what you've done, my grandma and granddad. They were the first skiers. They skied when they were on their honeymoon, way back when. And whenever it gets expensive, I say, Granddad, this is your fault. You started all of this. We had a little joke within the family. Buddy, I know he loves it, and I can't thank them enough for all they've done. Thank to everyone who's helped me on the way through. Notably, Chris Trevor, who unfortunately passed away last year. He was a good friend of me and the family. And, you know, thoughts go out to Oscar and Sharon. You know, it's coming up on just over a year since he passed. And yeah, everyone who's helped me, my coach, Steve Glanfield, Jay Bennett over here, he's helped me a lot the start of this year. You know, everyone knows who they are. They've all had an input, but those are just a few notable names. So thank you, guys.
And V.
And Vio, of course. Can't forget that one. God, she's going to kill me now. but yeah, Vio, you're a diamond. So thank you very much for everything you've done as well.
All right, then. And that brings to a conclusion episode 152 of the TWBC podcast. A new episode will be coming our way very, very soon. But in the meantime, my name is Tony Lightfoot, and I'm going to say ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.